This podcast is a production of Bread on the Water Media and RadioForThePeople.com and is engineered by Audio Diner Studios. Our theme music is provided to us by our dear friend Gordon Bonham, whose music can be purchased through GordonBonham.com. Our graphics for this podcast are provided by Kathy Piercy Frine. The podcast is sponsored by Artisan Realtors and Silicon Prairie Ventures.
This podcast is intended to give people a glimpse at what it's like to get a bad diagnosis, whether it's cancer or something else, and then go through a traumatic experience. First, we will discuss how my cancer story affected me and my family. Then we will talk about how their experiences affect other patients and their families, including discussions around why you need to advocate for yourself or for your family member. As we explore other patients' experiences, we will talk to some professionals about how to move forward after a traumatic, or not, medical event. I expect this to be a discussion that changes over time to reflect these combined experiences that I and others have had, and what our journeys are like, and the inevitable twists and turns that go along with real-world experiences. Join us on this ride as we attempt to show joy and laughter as well as the tragedy.
Welcome back to Normal, What's That Like? We're going to continue in this episode with our discussion with our host, Dan Adams, and his story of a cancer diagnosis.
Good afternoon. This is Dan Adams, and we're here doing episode 7, I believe, of Normal, What's That Like? Life After Cancer. Today, our guest is Dr. Jamie Renbarger, and we're going to talk to her about how she helped me and what she does in general with coaching, etc. But before we do that, a couple of things that we always have to do, which is recognize our sponsors and just a little bit of housekeeping. So the sponsors for our show are the music intro and exit are a piece from Gordon Bonham, and Gordon donated that to us to use, and you can listen to Gordon at GordonBonham.com. The artwork on the podcast, as well as on the website that we have, was donated by Kat Frayne. And Kat has not only donated the artwork, but given me the original art piece, which was very cool. So anyway, the other two sponsors of the show are Artisan Realtors and Bread for the Water Media. And Kevin Friedley does a lot of work for us and is behind the scenes. So anyway, with that, let's get started. So for as far as I'm concerned in this journey, for lack of a better term, that I've been on since I got diagnosed a year ago, and before that even when I was sick, there are three parts to the recovery. The body piece is one part, and then there's mind and spirit. And so mind and spirit, you know, there's several assets to that and several different facets to that. But what I'm going to say mostly is that I was struggling with both of those immediately after my hospitalization and all that, trying to figure out where I should go. And you know, I had a recommendation that I should find somebody to help me with my body piece of it, and but also that I should find somebody not only that could help with the body, but that they should be a specialist in cancer. And so I started looking around, and I wasn't finding anything, and ultimately I found a website which was probably a little dated at the time. But it was from Dr. Renbarger about a program she had that was a precision wellness program, and it integrated physical functioning, fitness, mental and cognitive health services, and nutrition, which is something we haven't talked about, and maybe we can talk about that today. But I got the great recommendation for the MOVE program, which would be the episode before this you've already heard about. And I think it's an awesome program. But on the side of the mind and spirit, Actually, I have been meeting with Dr. Renbarger now since August, I think, so quite a while. And for a while, we were meeting once a week unless one of us had a problem, and now we're down to once a month. But I feel so much better about where I am and who I am and what's happened. And also, this podcast is really a result of those conversations. So not only have we done the podcast and we're doing it and we have these episodes, without Dr. Renbarger, I wouldn't be doing these at all, probably. I just wouldn't have made the jump or made the leap, but it's been a good process. So anyway, with that, I'd like to introduce Dr. Jamie Renbarger. And can you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got here? I mean, and take as long as you need, but I know you have a lot of history around cancer in particular, but tell us how you got here and how we got together, kind of not specifically, but kind of how we got to this point.
Yeah, wow. First, just thank you so much, right? Thank you for everything you're doing and for creating this podcast and for wanting to sit down and have a conversation. It's just been such a privilege getting to know you and spend time with you. And this feels like we're like at the culmination of a journey, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's So thank you.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. So gosh, my journey to this point has been kind of long and a little crazy, right? When you think about the course of life as an oncologist, but also very intentional on my part, right? So we've talked a bit about this, but to share for others. So kind of the quick and dirty on me. I'm from Indiana, grew up in Indiana, actually grew up in Fort Wayne, and left after high school, went to college in upstate New York, was kind of like trying to, not quite sure what I wanted to do, but decided pretty early on that I wanted to go to medical school. I actually became an EMT when I was in college, which is a little side note, but I became an EMT, and that was my first exposure to what's it like to interact with a patient and what's it like to be a helper in a healthcare kind of situation. And loved it and decided at that point to go to medical school. So came back to the Midwest and went to medical school and did a residency in pediatrics in St. Louis. So I was in St. Louis for 7 years in the 90s, and then moved to Houston and did oncology training at Texas Children's Hospital, so a big children's hospital. And I think I was really drawn to oncology as a starting point because it's an incredibly intimate kind of experience to really walk with somebody on this journey through cancer, right? And it not only involves a lot of relational intensity, right? A very deep, meaningful relationship, but also at a time when, from a medical perspective, you're dealing with this huge thing, right? On a path that nobody wants to be on, right?
The club no one wants to belong to.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. For a long time, like, I'm the doctor that you never really want to like have to see, right? And I think I specifically chose pediatrics because kids have no preconceived ideas often of what it means to go through cancer. And at the same time, I had the opportunity to really work with whole families, right? So while many of my patients were kids, sometimes young kids, sometimes teenagers or people in their 20s, this is a whole family experience. And so there were a lot of, and are a lot of psychosocial and family dynamics that are part of that care. And the other third piece, is that in oncology, there's so much research. And I never, while I've done a lot of research over the course of my career, I never really have seen myself as a like hardcore scientist. But I think what I've learned about myself as I've done a lot of my own work and just reflection over the last few years is that I love supporting people and I love finding ways to make things better, right? How do we do what we do and continuously refine and improve so that people have better outcomes? And not only like from their cancer, right? We want to cure disease, but their quality of life and the way that they reintegrate with their community and the way that they live life moving forward. And so I finished, so I did my initial part of my training in Houston and then somehow landed back in Indiana. And it wasn't, you know, I think I've sort of followed my gut a lot when it's come for me, when I've been at decision points. But I had the opportunity to come back here and move to Indianapolis in 2002 as I was finishing my training. And it felt like the right move. And so I have been here ever since. I've been on faculty at IU since then, both in the Department of Pediatrics and in the Department of Medicine. So doing clinical care and research really, again, focused on a whole variety of ways to support optimizing outcomes in people with bad diseases. I had in 2016 actually had the great privilege of becoming the Cancer Center Director at Riley, and that really kind of on another level, right? Uh-huh, allowed sure. me to work with a group and to shape the way things are done there, the way that we provide care, and really allowed me to think creatively in ways, in a way about, you know, what are some of the gaps in care that we have, and to do some stuff about that. And that really led me down this path of wellness and cancer wellness and thinking about, you know, what happens after somebody like rings the bell at the end of treatment. And why do I feel so uncomfortable when those celebratory ceremonies are happening? Sure. Like, what's going on in me that I'm like, you know, like, this is wonderful. And a little, you know, like uncomfortableness in within myself of what's missing here, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
And so that really got me thinking a lot about you know, how can I best support people as they're finishing cancer treatment? And really going through, you know, not only trying to get their bodies back to functioning in the ways that they want to do the stuff that they want to do, but also, you know, suddenly, and we've talked some about this, right? But, you know, I mean, life is finite for everyone, right? But we spend a lot of time not really thinking about that.
Right.
And then suddenly you have this wake-up call, like, oh, crap, like I have this bad thing and that might like impact my life expectancy or my life quality, and what do I want to do with that, right? What does that mean for me? And
we've talked a lot about
this, you know, and I've spent a lot of time, you know, the other thing I'll share is in 2015 I lost my husband suddenly when he had a cardiac event, and so for me, while I'm still healthy, thankfully, my life changed overnight,
right,
for me and my kids, and it gave me perspective on the kind of journey and stuff that you went through.
Right. Sure.
And so I think I've taken a lot of time over the last few years myself just to figure out how I fit in with all that and what to do with that as somebody who is passionate about helping people with cancer. And so that led me down this path of really ultimately leaving my medical practice to focus on supporting people to navigate life, right? And to live full, healthy lives as much as possible, whatever that means for you, and to spend time with people talking to kind of figure that out and to support pulling the pieces together that you need to do the things that are important to you and especially to have hard conversations, right? To talk about the hard stuff. So that's kind of where I am. I don't know. I kind of went all over the place with that, but hopefully
yeah,
that was
no,
helpful.
That's great. I mean, so tell me, I guess, expound a little bit on this kind of program that you're, I mean, again, it's changed from where it started to where it is today, but
yeah.
But how do you go about that, and how do you get patients and all that kind of thing?
Yeah. So it has definitely evolved, right? So I will fully admit I'm a dreamer and I dream big and I like, and so Karuna is a nonprofit that we started in 2020. Our grand opening was the day that all the schools closed for the pandemic in 2020, March of 2020, of course, right? No. But, and as you alluded to at the beginning of the introduction, right, Karuna, the whole idea has been to provide comprehensive wellness care for people during and after cancer treatment. And honestly, for not only for the person with cancer, but also for their close family members, spouses, partners, kids, parents, those
right,
kinds of things.
Right.
Focused on optimizing physical functioning and fitness, psychosocial, emotional, and cognitive wellness and nutrition. And so what we did for Karuna was we pulled professionals together in all those disciplines and aimed to provide a whole package of services to help support getting people back to life, right? Back to the life that they want to live.
Which may be different than the life they used to live.
It might be different.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so having the time to explore and figure that out, right? Who am I and what does life mean to me now? And how do I want to live? And what are my priorities and all of that kind of stuff? Is huge. It's so, so important. And I think, just a little side note, but I think related to that, you know, so often what I see in some of these, you know, the conversations that I have with people like you, right, is you get, you know, you're sick, you get the news that you have cancer, and you jump on to this high-speed train of treatment, right, and lots of back and forth and a lot of appointments and, you know, scans and
poking and prodding.
Poking and prodding and, you know, unplanned hospitalizations and other things that, you know, you do, right? And it's
very intense.
It's very intense. And there's not always time, often not time, to really stop and say, oh my gosh, like what just happened, right? And what am I experiencing as a human being? It's a traumatic event. I mean, the bottom line, right? Getting a diagnosis like this and experiencing all this is trauma.
Right.
And then when people finish treatment, it's like, okay, woohoo, like let's, you know, woohoo, like, let's, you know, you're done. Like, you can go back and live. And you're like, whoa, wait a minute, you know, what the heck's going on? And where am I? What do I do? And what do I want to do? And all of that. And so without having and taking intentional time to do that, it can be really challenging, right? You're carrying around this weight that has never really been processed necessarily. And so often that part of it is so key to moving on with life in a good way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So while Karuna is, you know, the big, you know, the big dream plan, what I found is that number one, pulling all those pieces together was a little much for some people, especially right out of the gate.
Sure.
And all the overhead and energy that it took to keep all those pieces in place wasn't sustainable.
Especially in the middle of a pandemic.
Especially in the middle of a pandemic, yeah. Right. And so and yet for me, I still have such a strong passion to be able to support and help people on that journey. And so so I have launched my own coaching and consulting business, specifically to work with people with cancer, people, you know, family members of people with cancer, as well as a few other populations, but with a heavy emphasis on the cancer population, to one, hold space, develop relationships to really be able to work through and process the whole experience and what it means in the context of life here and now, and how that impacts, you know, how you think about life moving forward. And then my goal is, rather than having all the services in one place, which I wasn't able to continue to do, to help you help in pulling all the pieces together to support you to have the plan and to do the things that you need and want to do to live the life that you want, right?
Yeah.
So.
And it's worked great for me. I mean, my introduction to Karuna by Googling and then
so
talking
thankful.
To you got me back to Simon Cancer Center, which isn't interesting since that's where I started, but it got me back there. And then having this experience with you has been, it's been amazing. And it also has helped me because I went through all those emotions, obviously. For those of you who know me, if you're just listening and you don't know me, I turned 65 in about 6 weeks. And so I'm kind of at a transitional point in my life anyway, but you throw a stage 4 cancer diagnosis on top of that with a kind of cancer that has a tendency to come back. And, you know, it just does change kind of your outlook on life. I have a really good outlook now, but part of that's because I've changed some of my focus. I'm still working, I'm still doing all those things, but I have a more of a purpose. And my purpose in through conversation, I don't think, you know, I want to be careful about how I say this because it came from me, but with Dr. Rinbarger's help, that's kind of where this podcast comes from and some of the things I'm doing to help other cancer patients. Because when you get blindsided, I mean, that's how I feel about it, is you get blindsided with this diagnosis, you know, because I was perfectly healthy, I thought.
Yeah.
And you get blindsided, and then it is such a psycho-emotional kind of experience that you really have to take a minute. And if you don't, I mean, I worry about people that don't take a minute.
Yeah.
Because, you know, where does that affect them down the road if the cancer comes back, or even if it never comes back? It's still something that you live through, right?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's...
So, do you have other... one of the things that I mentioned in the beginning here was body and nutrition. And we've talked about, and you may have other people, but you know, I've experienced the MOVE program on the physical side through IU, that which is a pretty cool program, and it's provided to any cancer patient in the state of Indiana for free. I don't know how you can get much better than that, but are there other programs that you're aware of like that? Or,
you know, that's a great question. Not in Indiana that are free.
Yeah.
I think the MOVE program is so wonderful.
Yeah.
And Danny, I mean, you know, is just one of my favorite people.
Mine too.
Yes. Yeah. And Tara Ballinger oversees that program. And but absolutely, I mean, I think the MOVE program is hard to beat. I actually just sent another person there today. So
awesome.
Yeah.
From a standpoint of nutrition, do you have partners you work with, or?
I do.
Because we haven't really talked about that. We probably should have, but we haven't.
There's time. I do. I have a couple different partners who I work with. One who's based here in the state of Indiana. Her name is Bev Rella, and she, I think, just takes a really an approach to nutrition and nutritional health that really resonates with me, right? And that is, you know, I am all about supporting people to optimize whatever it is. So nutrition in this case, using their own, like, starting from where they are, right? I'm not someone who is going to impose, you know, you need to follow this diet or that diet or whatever, but let's look at you and who you are, and how can we work together to optimize things for you, and to think about how to do that in an effective way. And I think Bev takes a really wonderful approach and is so knowledgeable. So she's the person I work with in Indiana, and she spends part of her time out of state as well. So some of that's an opportunity for people to connect with her virtually. And then I've recently started partnering with a health and wellness coach who's based in Florida, who also does provides a lot of guidance for people. Her name is Catherine Haffey.
Cool.
So yeah, definitely. I can provide pretty basic guidance, and definitely when it comes to thinking about supplements and protein requirements and eating habits that are particularly important in terms of preventing cancer, decreasing inflammation, those kinds of things. I definitely provide or can provide some guidance myself,
well,
but I'm not a nutritionist.
Time we're together, we're gonna have to talk
about that. We'll talk nutrition, absolutely, definitely.
Who qualifies? I mean, how do you?
Yeah.
Who qualifies to talk to you?
I want. Is it all right if I?
Yeah,
touch
absolutely.
On one other thing before I go on to that, the
other
piece that we glossed over a little bit, and we haven't really talked much about it, but is cognitive wellness.
Right.
So
in
with the psychosocial and emotional wellness is also cognitive wellness. That's really important because I can't remember for sure if we've talked about like cancer fog or chemo fog or maybe
in
a little
fact,
bit.
I may
at
have
the beginning.
Been a little bit of that when we first started.
Yeah. Yes. Maybe. Yes. Yeah. And so this sort of brain fogginess or haziness that many, many people experience, even when they don't get chemotherapy or radiation, that's why it's evolved from being called chemo brain to cancer brain or cancer fog, and that is this, you know, hazy thinking that can sometimes impact attention span and memory and the way we process or the way an individual processes information. Some of that definitely can be related to the inflammatory process, to the drugs that are on board, both chemo drugs and other medications that are sometimes required for pain or anesthesia or other things, and as well as processing or carrying anxiety and trauma, fear, and this traumatic experience. Some of that gets better over time by itself. And for some people, the effects can be longer lasting or more significant, and can cause trouble when people are trying to go back to work or function in their lives or keep track of, you know, lots of schedules and other things like that. And so one, I think definitely working with someone like a coach or a therapist can be really helpful for some people. Time can certainly make things better in other people. And then there are approaches to really retrain the brain to be able to process information in a way that's more similar to how it was, how you were able to before. And you know, there is more and more information out there about kind of neuroplasticity in our brains, kind of relearning how to do things or to process more complicated information in a way that allows us to function in the world, right? To do the stuff that we want to do. So I do partner with someone who specifically does neuroplasticity work with people impacted by cancer and other traumas. That seems to have a really positive impact for a lot of people. So anyway, that's something.
No, I can imagine. In fact, it's really interesting that you talk about cancer brain versus chemo brain, because that's what everybody hears is chemo brain. And I have a friend who his cancer doesn't react. A chemotherapy regimen doesn't really help the kind of cancer he has. And so he's on immunotherapy, and he goes, you know, I never hear about immunotherapy brain.
Yes.
But yes. He has that fog kind of
feeling
a lot. And and so cancer brain is a much better term, and maybe we can get get people to talking about that, because I know I guess I may have had one treatment, but even prior to that, my brain was really bad. I mean, I couldn't remember passwords and you know, all kinds of things, and couldn't process complicated things at all for probably a month or more.
Yeah.
That I couldn't do any of that, and then it came back very slowly. By the time I got to you, most of that was back, but then I had a little bit of chemo, the fog from the chemotherapy. So. Yeah. I think that's hugely important, and I didn't mean to gloss over that at all. I think that's a big thing, because I know where I was at some point, and you know, my kids said one of the more recent podcasts that, you know, that was one of the hardest things for them, because I was always the go-to if they had a question, and they, instead of getting a blank look on my face,
exactly.
What?
Yes. So they're like, wait, where did my dad go?
yeah, exactly, and that's how they felt. But fortunately, most of that's come back for me. You'd have to talk to my wife and kids to make sure that all of it's come back, and they might debate that.
Uh-huh. But definitely.
So, excuse me, but let's go back to who qualifies and how do they get in touch with you and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So, so honestly, I am happy to work with anybody impacted by cancer. And we might have talked about this in one of our early conversations, but just for perspective, the National Cancer Institute, right, defines a cancer survivor not only as the person who had cancer, but also as anyone with a close relationship to them who's impacted by their disease. So a cancer survivor, technically, right, is someone who has had cancer, but could also be someone like a partner, a parent, a child, and I work with people in all those categories, right? So people who have or have had cancer, their spouses, partners, parents of both children and young adults or adults with cancer, as well as adult children of people with cancer, right? Or who have had cancer. And sometimes, in addition, I would say, family members of people who have lost someone to cancer.
Sure.
Right?
Oh, yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. So, and again, my goal is to work with people to, especially on the psychosocial, emotional, and cognitive pieces, but also to help in putting nutrition and physical functioning elements together for people if that's important and helpful for them. People can find me on my website, which is jamierenbarger.com, and can also email me directly or reach out to me. My business phone number and email are both on my website as well. But I'm happy to connect with anyone, and if I'm not the right person, then to help in making sure that people who need support get connected. And yeah, I'm just thrilled to be able to talk about it, because my goal, as you know, as I step away from my university job and hospital-based job, is to figure out how do people even know that I exist, right? How to make sure that people know that I'm here to provide support. So
yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons we're talking, is I've been so impacted. I want other people to have that same experience, and mm-hmm. and hopefully that happens. But
yeah.
I know you mentioned to me as when I came in today that you're going to do some new things. So what are kind of your goals with what you're doing individually and the program? What do you hope to accomplish going forward?
Yeah, so, wow, that's a big question.
little bite.
Yes. Yeah, so definitely, you know, I think for me, for the foreseeable future, providing space and contact, developing relationships for one-on-one support for people is something I'm open to. And that I'm available for, and that's both in person and virtual services. So that's number one. Number two is starting groups. So I am launching in April one or two groups. Those will be like early evening in-person groups here at my office, which is at 93rd and Meridian Street on the north side of Indianapolis. And those will be therapeutic support groups. So that I'll facilitate potentially with one other person to really provide space for people to talk about stuff that's on their minds, right? And in a supportive but also therapeutic environment, right? And so those will be starting up in April, and I can send you more information about
sure.
that we can put in, in the link for the show or any kind
and
of show notes.
On
that
the show. We also, there's a website for the Normal What's That Like, and it's normalwhatsthatlike.com. There's also a Facebook page, Normal What's Like That, whatsthatlike.com, or Facebook. So, I mean, you give me the
sure.
information, we'll have links, and I assume it'll be on your website as well.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. And then, so group work. And then the third thing, which we've also talked a little bit about, is personal growth retreat experiences.
Right.
Yeah. So we're both passionate about hiking and the wilderness and being outdoors and just the... I think the power of that kind of experience of really truly being grounded,
right,
and having time to be, right, to be in this culture of doing, just to have time and space to reflect and
getting somewhere where the cell phone doesn't even work.
Yes, I know. I took your tip. You talked in one of our conversations of the circuit about satellite, having a satellite phone. I'm like, oh, I think I need to invest in a satellite phone. Just so I am facilitating small group. So no more than 10 to 15 people in a group and accessible wilderness experiences, really for, again, providing space for processing and for just an opportunity to be. I don't have one scheduled yet for the cancer impacted population, but it's a matter of time.
But you do have one scheduled for a different.
I do. We have one for the other group that I spend a lot of time with is people in helping professions. So the other side of the medical equation, right, is working with physicians and nurses and psychotherapists and others to support them in their both personal and professional journey. And so we do have a retreat coming up in April for women in helping professions, and then a couple others that are on the horizon. So that'll be coming up as well.
Cool. The last thing I have on my list is philosophy, but I think you've covered a lot of that. Generally, what's your philosophy about wellness, especially after cancer? And cancer related, you know, again, you're a cancer survivor, as you said, in many aspects.
Yeah, you know, thanks for asking that. I am personally passionate about comprehensive, intentional wellness and living. And I've evolved because in that I come at this from a traditional Western medical training perspective, right? So medications are, you know, we want to fix things and we want to prescribe. and not that we want to use medications unnecessarily, it's just that as a physician, right, physicians like to help, and that's, you know, using therapeutics as a way that people know how to help and support people to try to make things better. And for me, both personally and professionally, right, using food as medicine and being active and really supporting my body to do the things that I want to do have always been really, really important to me. And so
you're fine.
I think all of those parts and pieces are important. Over the last few years, what I've really come to have such a deep appreciation for is the impact that our mental and emotional health have not only on our physical health, but on our ability to live life. And what I've found is a big gap in specific support for people who have been through the kind of stuff you've been through. And from the perspective that doesn't allow that part to slip through the cracks,
right,
but also really can incorporate the other pieces too, and that being the physical functioning and exercise piece, right, using our bodies, but also the food and nutrition and the medicine piece, right?
Right.
And so to go back to your question of, you know, what's my philosophy, right? My philosophy is that, you know, beating cancer requires some very evidence-based traditional approaches to cancer treatment, and living life with and after cancer requires a pretty intentional, integrated approach, and without really processing the trauma and dealing with the mental and emotional components of the whole journey, it can be virtually impossible to actually get to the other pieces, right? If I'm all wrapped up in my head and panicked or so afraid, then I don't have a lot of bandwidth left to get to the store and get healthy food, to figure out how I'm going to fit in my exercise, or to, you know, support my kids, right? To you know, or to enjoy the moment, right, this moment, right, in life. And so I think that I've kind of come around to where I choose to spend my time is in starting at the core of what I think is so impactful on all the rest, and then helping to support people put those other pieces into place. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes great sense, and it's awesome. And it also, I've had with this podcast, I've had a couple of people say, well, you haven't focused at all on the medical side of things, really, other than telling my story. And the reason I haven't is because there's a ton of resources, yeah, for that. I mean, there's podcasts, American Cancer Society, and in my case, Leukemia Lymphoma Society. Yeah. I mean, there's a ton of information on the medical side.
Yeah.
There is much less information on this side. And what I've also found is even some of the cancer support groups tend to be focused with professionals talking about treatment and those kinds of things instead, right, of this emotional, physical, yep, nutritional aspect of things. And that's why I think it's, that for me, that's really important, because it's been the part that impacted me the most. Not that the cancer didn't impact me, and I have an awesome oncologist, yep, and yep, I trust, yep, her, but there's a whole other piece to that. You know, I rang the bell, and now I go through my, you know, my six-month scans and my three-month things, but there's still a whole lot of other thing out there that didn't have answers, yeah, for.
Yep, exactly. And that's, you know, I say this a little in jest, but no, you know, I have such respect for all my oncologist friends and colleagues and people out there. And, you know, writing chemotherapy is not rocket science, right? Yes, it takes a lot of training to know what to write and, you know, whatever. And the world has lots of people out there doing that. And there aren't a lot of people who have the... I know that world. I know that world really, really well. And it's a privilege to hold space to say, okay, I know intimately what that all is. And now let's think about life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So.
Well, I don't know that I could wrap this up any better. Unless you have something else, I'm going to say that's the amazing wrap up for our session. Yeah. And again, I just want to reiterate that jamierenberger.com, if you need to contact her, or if you just want more information, that's a great place to go. Thank you very much from me as well as the podcast. And I'll see you again soon.
Yeah, thank you. All right.